The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Visser v. State Farm Insurance. Counsel, as you're getting squared away, I'll just remind you of our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 to appellant's counsel. You can use that time for rebuttal only. Each of you will have an opportunity to appear in front of the lectern. You can raise and lower the lectern to your height at your convenience. There's a button right in front. The lectern also includes the timing and lighting, the timing and the timing restrictions in its light, and there's actually a clock, so you can realize how much time you have remaining. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. Counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. I'm Matt Barber, here for the appellant, Amanda Visser. This is an insurance coverage case, and it hinges on what State Farm's policies say. In this case, this court should reverse the district court because State Farm's policies provide that they both apply to Ms. Visser's injuries and that she is entitled to the single highest applicable UIM limit.
Does the policy say that both, I think it says if, well, I'll tell you what, go ahead, you proceed. I'll ask the question later.
Right. So it says if they apply. They apply because both policies have an identical grant of coverage. They both say they provide coverage to an insured who is injured because of a motor vehicle accident involving an underinsured motor vehicle used as a motor vehicle. Everyone agrees that Ms. Visser isn't insured and that she was injured as a result of a motor vehicle accident involving an underinsured motor vehicle used as a motor vehicle. So she checks all those boxes. She is entitled to coverage under both policies, so they both apply.
Well, both policies say if one or more other policies apply, then you get the coverage is the maximum. But where is the language in the policy which says both apply?
It says in the if other, I think it's under the, I think it's page 14 of the addendum, it's their policy, and it says if more than one State Farm policy applies, then you're entitled to the single highest limit. We don't stack your coverage, Ms. Visser, mm-hmm. but you're entitled to the single highest limit that applies.
I feel like that language in the policy asks the question, but I don't believe it answers the question. I mean, what language in the policy answers the question, you know, which policy or policies apply?
That's the grant of coverage language. It doesn't limit coverage to one policy for the occupied vehicle. Both policies broadly provide coverage to uninsured who is injured because of a motor vehicle accident. And Ms. Visser is an insured who was injured because of a motor vehicle accident. If State Farm wanted to limit coverage, it knows how to do so because of the Lefebvre case where it did that exactly. But we don't have that language in either policy.
Well, it looks like the district court was attempting to construe the policy language in the context of Section 3A5 of 65B49. Why is it you feel the district court erred in its application of that occupying a motor vehicle language in that statute?
So that statute's a priority statute. It's a map to consumers about where to find coverage based on the circumstances of a particular crash. And here, Ms. Visser is following the letter of that statute. She's looking to the Pontiac policy, the occupied vehicle policy. But State Farm wrote the Pontiac policy to incorporate the higher limit from the Chevy policy, which takes us down to subdivision 7 of the same statute, which allows State Farm to provide broader coverage than the No-Fault Act requires.
So your position is that when the statute says the limit specified for that motor vehicle, it's referring to the vehicle that was, it's simply a door in this case to both policies because that vehicle is covered under a policy that refers to other policies.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's our position. And then State Farm points to 3 other provisions in its policy, but 2 of the 3 undercut State Farm's position. One of the provisions is that State Farm may apportion payments among more than one policy, among the applicable policies, and that contemplates more than one policy applying. The second provision is that State Farm limits its coverage to the single highest applicable limit. And again, that contemplates more than one policy, and it prevents stacking of UIM. And Ms. Visser is not asking to stack these. She's just asking for this for coverage up to the single highest applicable limit. The last provision that State Farm relies upon is that it may pay less than the policy limits, but that doesn't determine which policy applies to this accident. The scope of coverage language does that job. And it makes sense that State Farm would put that language in its policy. State Farm wouldn't obligate itself to pay the policy limits every time there's an accident. All it does is give State Farm discretion to pay policy limits if a claim would meet or exceed its limits. Unless the court has more questions,
How do you address the Supreme Court's general premise that underinsured motorist coverage follows the vehicle, not the person? How does that apply in this case?
Right, that's the Lynch case that we cite to. And Lynch says if insurance companies want to limit coverage or exclude coverage, the burden is on them to put such an exclusion in their policies. And State Farm didn't do that here. State Farm provided broader coverage, which it's allowed to do under Subdivision 7. Unless the court has any other questions, we would respectfully request that this court reverse and remand for trial on this UIM claim.
Looks like there are no other questions. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Kimberly Scriver, and I represent the respondent, State Farm Mutual Automobile Insurance Company. In this case, statute 65B.49, subdivision A3A5, provides the answer. As was noted, in Minnesota, underinsurance coverage follows the vehicle, not the person. Subdivision 3A5 states in this case that only the Pontiac policy applies. Appellant was in the Pontiac vehicle at the time of the accident. She wasn't insured under the Pontiac policy, and those facts are not disputed in this case. Therefore, pursuant to the very first sentence in 3A5, the Pontiac policy is the only policy that applies. This statute must be read in conjunction with the State Farm policies as the district court read them together. And under Minnesota law, statutes are read into contracts. It is assumed that when the contract or when the policy agreement was entered into, that this statute was kept in mind.
Is that a general concept of no fault, the no fault statute?
So it's a general concept of contract law. So policies of insurance are treated just like any other contract. And in other cases, some of the cases we cited to courts have said that, I believe it was the Metropolitan v. General Mills case, courts have said that they've done that in the concept of the No-Fault Act as well. So it's any statute.
I have a recollection that concept has been specifically applied in the no-fault concept, but neither of the briefs cited a case to that effect. But am I correct in that recollection?
Okay. And I believe the Pepper, and I apologize, I might have cited the wrong cases, the Pepper v. State Farm case did deal with insurance, and I believe the No-Fault Act, and it did say that policy provisions cannot contravene applicable statutes. And so in this case, 3A5 provides the priority of coverage, and the policy can't contradict that statute. So contracts and policies should be read to go along with the statute. You shouldn't read them differently. You should try to make sure that they are read in conjunction with each other as much as possible.
Clearly, we wouldn't interpret the contract to be in conflict with the statute, but if the statute here is suggesting, whether a particular policy applies, it seems like it would be better if that determination were made by the policy itself, by the contract itself.
Well, in this case, the policies do not make the determination. There is no specific language in the policies that say, in the Pontiac policy specifically, that say we're incorporating the Chevy policy. There's nothing like that. There is no language that says the Pontiac policy is going to incorporate the Chevy policy or provide coverage, the additional coverage from the Chevy policy. And so you go to the statute. Again,
there's also no policy language that reiterates the same concept as the statute, as 3A5, correct?
Not explicitly. There are a few provisions in the policy that do speak of what State Farm is obligated to pay. So under the Pontiac policy, for example, it says we will provide coverage when you're in an accident. We'll provide this underinsured coverage, and then it provides a policy limit of $100,000. So it does contemplate that it's only going to be that $100,000 limit of coverage. Specifically, there's also language that says State Farm is not obligated to pay any amount in excess of the available limits under this coverage of this policy. And that comes at page 12 of appellant's addendum, which is contained in its language from the Pontiac policy.
So this case is a little bit different from Lefebvre, correct?
It is a little bit different, yes. But the overall concept still applies. The language in Lefebvre was a little bit different. It did include that specific exclusion, but simply because the State Farm policy doesn't explicitly list the exclusion in this case, it does not mean that the Chevy policy is incorporated or does apply. So it doesn't, this case, the policy doesn't include the language from Lefebvre, but it also does not incorporate the Chevy policy or say we're going to provide coverage under the Chevy policy. So then you go back to 3A5, read the policy in conjunction with 3A5, and you find that only the Pontiac policy applies. Appellant has argued that Subdivision 7 could be read to say that State Farm could provide more coverage in this case, but there's a distinction between what Subdivision 7 addresses and what is at issue here. So what we have here is a priority of coverage issue. What Subdivision 7 deals with is the minimum requirements for coverage under any given policy. And the Minnesota Supreme Court in Carlson addressed this issue. They addressed 3A5, and they said that 3A5 mandates the priority of coverage, but it does not give a basic definition of the scope of mandated coverage. It doesn't set the minimum requirements. So that's the distinction between Subdivision 7 and 3A5. What Subdivision 7 contemplates is minimum requirements, but what we have here is a priority of coverage issue. And so that is different than, that is why Subdivision 7 is inapplicable here. There is language in the State Farm policy. You get to that if more than one policy applies language in the State Farm policy. But that language does not apply here. You don't even get to that. As the district court found, there is not more than one policy that applies. And the reason that that if more than one policy language is included in the State Farm policy is because it contemplates situations that the second sentence of Subdivision 3A5 addresses. So
I believe we've had cases involving car-pedestrian collisions where the pedestrian is injured and has an auto insurance policy for no fault and underinsured motorist, and those policies apply.
And so that actually comes in the third sentence of Subdivision 3A5. So the second two sentences in 3A5 provide exceptions to the rule that underinsurance coverage follows the vehicle. And so that third sentence of that subdivision says, if at the time of the accident the injured person is not occupying a motor vehicle, meaning they are pedestrian, the injured person is entitled to select any one limit of liability for any one vehicle afforded by a policy under which the injured person is insured.
So you would say then that the policy language in this case that regards bodily injury that might be detached from that particular occupied vehicle would only apply in the no-fault setting, when someone's not occupying a vehicle. That is, that you can't extend the policy, one policy to cover a different injury, a different, if the person is occupying a different vehicle, only if the person is not occupying a different vehicle. Does that language apply?
Correct. So the exception to the rule that under insurance follows the vehicle only comes if you are occupying a vehicle where you're not an insured covered by that vehicle's policy. And so that's what, when you get to that, if more than one policy language applies, when you get to that language in the State Farm policy, that's what that's the kind of situation that's referring to. That's when that language could come into play. But that is simply just not what we have in this case.
So, counsel, if I may, at a higher level, so I hear the appellant saying is, well, yes, 3A5 talks about prioritization in which policy, but then this language is the limit specified for that motor vehicle to decide what that is. You go back to the policy here for the Pontiac, which then incorporates these higher, the limits of the additional policy. I mean, I think that's what he's saying, and I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm wrong. So if that is, and you can jump in here too and tell me if you think I'm hearing him wrong, then isn't this a matter of kind of statutory interpretation, how we read the words, is the limit specified for that motor vehicle, if that's the limit specifically for the Pontiac, or whether those are the limits overall set out in the Pontiac's policy? Is that fair?
So I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question. And first of all, I guess I would say that we don't even get to the point in this case where the Pontiac policy does incorporate the Chevy policy. There is no language in the Pontiac policy, that incorporates the Pontiac policy explicitly. It doesn't
the
say
the Chevy policy.
The Chevy policy, excuse me. Yes. So I don't think that we even get to that step in the first place. You go back to 3A5 and it says, you don't have language one way or the other saying whether the Pontiac policy incorporates the Chevy policy or anything like that. So then again, you go back to 3A5, and it's just simply when you're in a vehicle at the time of the accident and you are insured under that vehicle's policy, that is the policy you turn to for coverage. And there is no exception to that rule that would apply in this case. Ultimately, the prior cases that address this issue, such as Lefebvre, such as Jurek, all relied on 3A5 to help interpret the policy. And when you do that, you come to the same conclusion in this case. And the policy, when it's read in conjunction with the statute, comes to the conclusion that only the Pontiac policy applies. The court doesn't have any other questions. Respondent would.
I'm wondering whether the same statute was in effect at the time of the Lefebvre opinion. Do you happen to know?
I believe it was.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you.
Yep. So if there are no other questions, respondent would simply request that the decision of the district court be upheld. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Graber. Mr. Barber, any rebuttal?
Starting with just general Minnesota insurance policy contract interpretation rules, the policy sets forth what the limits of liability are for the insurance company. And as long as the insurance policy doesn't contravene the applicable statutes, we enforce what those limits are. And Subdivision 7 allows insurance companies to provide broader coverage. We're not contravening 3A5 at all. We're following the letter of it. We're going through the Pontiac policy. And then under the if other underinsured motorist coverage applies. So the if is the hurdle here, and both policies do apply because the Chevy and the Pontiac policy have the same broad grants of coverage. They both provide if an insured is injured because of a motor vehicle accident, she's entitled to coverage. There's no limiting language like in Lefebvre. There's nothing limiting it in the language of the policy to when you're a pedestrian or if you're occupying a vehicle that you don't own or anything like that. It just says if another State Farm policy applies, then you're entitled to the single highest limit. We don't stack. That's all that says.
The argument is it doesn't apply because it's not expressly incorporated.
Well, sorry, Your Honor. I
believe the argument was that it doesn't apply the second policy doesn't apply because it's not incorporated into the first one. They don't refer to each other expressly, and therefore the occupied vehicle standard applies.
So both policies have the identical grants of coverage, which would mean the Pontiac policy wouldn't apply either under this situation because it has the same grant of coverage language as the Chevy policy. Because State Farm concedes that the Pontiac policy applies, then the Chevy policy applies as well because it has the identical grant of coverage language. So both of them do apply because they both grant coverage to Ms. Visser under the circumstances of this case. And because they both apply, it doesn't have to be expressly, it doesn't have to identify it by policy number. It just has to be another State Farm insurance policy that applies to the bodily injury. That's what it says on page 14 of the record. It's the first paragraph, number one. The only criteria is it be another State Farm policy. So Cheryl Visser, Amanda's mother, has been paying the premiums on both of these. That's what we're asking for, is that she get the coverage that she's been paying for. That's the only limit to it, is that it be a State Farm policy.
What she's been paying for on the other policy. I mean, she's paid less, presumably, on this policy because of the lower limit, right?
It's presumable to be that, but she has been paying limits on the Chevy policy as well.
I mean, if we ruled in your favor, would that encourage policyholders to, you know, to buy one policy with high limits and then other policies with lower limits, and therefore, you know, to economize, get the lowest possible premiums, but take advantage of the best policy in every case, regardless which car is involved?
I don't know too many consumers who actually read their insurance policies, but that could be one way to do it.
Agents, you know, agents could bid low by obtaining quotes for such policies.
It's possible, but I think the better policy is that this furthers what the Minnesota Supreme Court did in Lynch. It encourages insurance companies to do what they do, write their policy to provide the coverage they want to provide. And that's exactly what State Farm did in Lefebvre, but didn't do here. So that's what we've got different here. So Minnesota Supreme Court recognizes insurance companies unilaterally draft these things, these insurance policies, and they can limit the coverage. And then if a limit or an exclusion violates Minnesota law or public policy, then the burden is on the plaintiff to go and get it invalidated.
It would seem to me if your position were credited, if insurers believe that this is the correct interpretation of the law, then they would simply have the opposite in their multiple coverage provisions. Instead of saying the maximum amount that may be paid for all such policies combined is the single lowest applicable limit as opposed to the single highest. You would agree with me, wouldn't you, that if your interpretation is correct, the insurance companies must be misunderstanding the law, or they wouldn't write these policies this way, that provision this way?
That could be it. I'm not going to speculate about what insurance companies do and don't know when they're underwriting or reviewing the law, but the way Minnesota law is right now is...
I mean, that would avoid the conundrum. That's the only way to avoid the conundrum that Judge Johnson is referring to. Having individuals purchase a low policy and a high policy and always getting the higher limit, regardless of what vehicle is involved. The only way to secure against that would be to include language that's just the opposite, unless, of course, State Farm is interpreting the contract exactly as intended by what is implied by 3A, which is that you apply the occupied vehicles policy, not the other.
It was a long question. I know.
You can object to the question, or you can grab whatever inquiry nugget you might find in it and answer as you please.
The gist of it is the insurance company wrote the policy. It's got to lay in the bed that it made. Under Minnesota contract interpretation rules, this should go for Ms. Visser because both policies cover her injuries, so they both apply. So we'd respectfully ask this court to reverse and remand for trial on this UIM case.
Before you sit down, that was a good summation, but if the Judge Ross will allow, I have one more question about the statute. I mean, it's my general sense that the No Fault Act often The provisions in the No-Fault Act are often phrased in terms of setting certain minimums or floors. You know, the insurance company must do at least this or and so on. This statute, it seems a little different. It doesn't say, it says if such and such, the limit, I'm paraphrasing, available, is the limit specified for that motor vehicle. It doesn't seem to allow options or wiggle room, or doesn't seem to allow an insurer to go beyond that or to do anything different. You know, it basically specifies or directs that in this, in if the condition is present, the limit is this limit. So I mean, first of all, is my impression correct about the No-Fault Act generally? Is my observation correct that this statute's a little bit different? And if so, what's the consequence of that?
Right. So generally, the No-Fault Act is the floor. Minnesota Supreme Court says that insurance companies can't contract below those coverages or have narrower coverages than that, but they're allowed to go broader. It does say the amount specified, and State Farm specifies in its policies that the single highest applicable limit applies, and because both policies do apply, they're incorporated here. So that's the result there. And the way the Minnesota Supreme Court has read this this priority statute is, it explains where you look to for coverage. It's a map to coverage. It doesn't explain what types of coverages must be offered at each priority level. That's, I think it's Carlson or either the Becker case, one of those two cases that explains that. This just says where to look for. It doesn't say that you have to provide this type of coverage at this priority or this type of coverage at the other priority.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Barber, Ms. Scriver, well argued. Case is well briefed. Matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.